3, 2, 1. Hi, I'm Joe Tate, and I have a podcast. It's called Over the Timeline. I look back at the highlights and a few lowlights of my sports broadcast career. Over the Timeline, brought to you by the Life Care Centers of Elyria, Westlake, and Medina.
Welcome into another edition of Over the Timeline with Joe Tate, our WEOL.com podcast. Of course, you're hearing us on WEOL.com stream number 2 if you're listening on Wednesday night at 6 o'clock. And of course, you can pick all these up at WEOL.com for archived episodes. And a big thank you goes out to Life Care Center of Elyria, Medina, and Westlake for sponsoring the weekly podcast here with Joe Tate. And always a lot of fun to get the opportunity to sit down with Joe and talk about his broadcasting past. And Joe, what I find fascinating about doing these with you are the things I learned as I start researching what I'm about to come and talk to you. And when I started this, I found old soccer highlights from your time calling games at OU and some other things. And then I came across some sound from WBOW in Terre Haute, Indiana, of you calling an Indianapolis Capitals game against the Jersey Jays. And I thought to myself, who on earth are the Indianapolis Capitals and the Jersey Jays? Which, of course, led me into research. And this was apparently a team in the Continental Football League. I had no idea this thing even existed, Joe.
For 1 year, Matt, that's how far it existed. And in fact, I don't believe all of the teams in the league made it through the first year.
They did not, as I was doing the research. So one of their claims to fame is they had the first ever Mexican team in professional American football. They were the Mexican Golden Aztecs. They did not make it through the entire year, believe it or not. They had to fold mid-season. There was another team, I think, in Hawaii who ended up leaving and going to Portland mid-season, which I'm sure creates some scheduling conflicts for people who are trying to get those games involved.
Well, it cut down on travel, didn't it?
Certainly would, yeah. I feel in that case it would do that. I did see it kind of claim to fame. 4 Hall of Famers went through it. Coaches, Bill Walsh, Ken Stabler, Doak Walker, and Steve Van Buren. Of course, the last two there made it into the NFL, or the Football Hall of Fame, I should say, as players. Bill Walsh, of course, tremendous coach, and Ken Stabler, very much the same thing. So I suppose that was their claim to fame over their year of existence there in the Continental Football League.
Well, it was an experience for a variety of reasons. It was a new league, new teams. We knew nothing about them. You know more about them now than we knew about them going in. And when they gave us the pregame, you know how in pro sports they give you the pregame notes?
Yeah.
One sheet.
That's it.
That was it for both teams.
One sheet. So I think they had like, what, 32 men rostered or something along those lines. I think that the soundbite I'm going to play is from August 1969. Is that a preseason game they were playing against the Jersey Jays?
Yes.
So they did have a preseason, and Terre Haute wasn't where they played these games. They played in Busch Stadium in Indianapolis, was my understanding.
Yeah, but they wanted to expand their field of interest, so they paid to put the game on WBOW, and they didn't have any play-by-play or color guy at the time, so we did that job for them, and they paid us to do it.
Now, did they end up on radio anywhere else after this was completed, or they just cut play that season in silence?
If they did, it was a low power because I never heard about them. As I say, you know more about them than I do because you did the research.
Well, fantastic. That's what I love, though, about this stuff. I love finding out things about leagues, organizations, people. I'm one of the few people who can tell you that the Baltimore Stallions are the only teams to ever win a Canadian Football League championship in the United States. They're the only team.
And they did it more than once.
Yeah, and then the Baltimore Ravens, the last year they won it, the Ravens came in and kicked them out of Baltimore, and I think they moved up to Ottawa or something and then disbanded. But I love obscure things like that in the sports world, and this, Joe, was a gem. I had never heard of this league or these two teams here.
Craig, I wish that you had been sitting with us on that afternoon.
Oh, I wish I could have.
Because you would have enjoyed every moment of it, because you would have been the only one there who was not involved with the two teams.
So word hadn't quite gotten down to Terre Haute about these guys?
And nobody cared.
All right. Believe me.
Indiana State's football program in those days was shaky at best, and So going to see football at the stadium, and it was a big stadium, was confined to high school games, which drew reasonably well. But, boy, this was a new all-time low played in front of nobody.
So the Sycamores and the Capitals didn't draw real well there at the stadium, huh?
But the Sycamores looked like an SRO compared to the Capitals, believe me.
That's fascinating. Well, one of the things I always find unique about these leagues as well when they're trying to get in there, it didn't sound like they tried to compete with the NFL. Essentially, it sounded like this Continental Football League, and I'll play a soundbite later that kind of points that, sends that fact home. This was a minor league, and I think in doing my research, one of the quarterbacks for this Indianapolis Capitals team was actually earning money from the LA Rams while playing for the Indianapolis Capitals. So this was true minor league football here. And, of course, to try and draw people in, I believe they try to do some things. And we picked this up in the third quarter. That's where our audio started here that I was able to find in our Joe Tate vault we have locked away here at WEOL. But I know it's the third quarter because you come right in, about 8 minutes left. And I was sitting there kind of thinking about what I was going to talk about. And this is the first thing that popped out to me. And I'll play it, and we'll see if the folks at home can figure out exactly what stood out as well, and then we'll talk a little bit about it. So this is from 1969, August in Terre Haute, Indiana. The Indianapolis Capitals, who are about to go on and win the Continental Football Championship, taking on the Jersey Jays in preseason and apparently wearing some strange uniforms.
8 minutes to play in the third quarter. My only suggestion to the Caps would be, Nate, that they change the color of the backfield numbers. Those black numbers on red jerseys are extremely difficult to see. The linemen all have the white numbers on the red jerseys, and that's fine.
As I sat there and heard that, I kind of thought to myself, is he talking about the writing on the field? And then when you bring up that last line, you say the linemen have white numbers on the... So they wore two different jerseys, essentially, the backfield and the offensive linemen?
Evidently.
that's how well you remember that.
Did you hear the girl's voice way in the background? That was one of the Indianapolis cheerleaders.
Okay.
They did bring their cheerleaders.
Well, that was nice of them. They at least had somebody that watching. That make up for 50% of the audience for that one?
Just about.
Yeah. But I always love things like that. It's always interesting to hear these minor league teams and some of the things they try and do to get folks in the seats. And that's certainly an interesting fact. And maybe that made it a little easier to spot your favorite players when you know he's got the black numbers on the jersey. It is good to hear, though, because that is one of the things we talk about here at WEOL. That has been something that's been going on for years. It seems nowadays they try and get the new fancy-looking numbers, and they're blue on blue, and nobody who's calling a game is able to see them.
Amen.
So I'm glad to hear at least we've all had struggles with that one. And in true preseason fashion, there were a couple of sound bites. I don't know if we're going to have time to play them here, but guys come into this game who you have no idea. Apparently, they didn't give you a roster for either. And it's number 13. He comes into the game. I love things like that, especially going back in the past. Now, in the third quarter, it didn't take long for the Capitals to get on the scoreboard. Joe Wynn ends up making a 60-yard touchdown reception for the Caps as they get on the board. Sounds like they were taking it to the Jersey Jays. But what I love about this touchdown call is in all the glory that Joe Wynn has, you bring up his nickname, which may not have been the highest point of his career. Let's take a listen to the touchdown call.
Here we go now for the Indianapolis Capitals. It's a 2nd-and-12 situation at their own 40-yard line. Stavroth calling the shots for the Caps. They're moving Woods outside the tight end, and then Stavroth is back to throw. Long shot to Wynn. 30-25. It's off to the races. Touchdown. Joe Wynn's on the post pattern. Outran the secondary and went all the way for a quick six. Outrunning both Hal Vassivari and also back there on the horse, but much too late, Sam Cromer. So it is now a 27-3 ball game, and that's the second long grab and run by Joe Wynn's. Another dandy.
58 yards that one traveled, and that's a booming touchdown pass. Both on the 40, it's actually a 60-yard touchdown pass, so 60-yard touchdown pass. Now the Caps exploding now with a 27-3 lead. They'll go for the extra point.
You know, Joe Wins last year was given the rap of bad hands Wins. They said he couldn't hang on to the football. He had dropped more than his share, according to the experts. There's a boot by Bobich. Good. Bobich makes it a 28-3 ball game. But this year, Joe Wins has come on, first of all, with six grabs against Alabama, and then he has caught a couple here today for touchdowns, and the score is 28-3, and so Mr. Joe Wins has most certainly erased any bad hands knock that might have been put against him with some fine pass catching this afternoon. And
old bad hand Wins getting into the end zone.
You know what? I think this may have been a regular season game. I think they tried to play this league and other leagues that have come and gone. You know, they always tried to play them either before or after the NFL. And I believe this, the more I listen to this, I think it was in a regular season game that was the league was playing the season before the NFL got started for their season.
Okay, so they were trying to get a little bit of that crowd in there mixed in as well.
Right.
Well, very cool. Now, do you get the opportunity, remember, to talk to players before the game, or how'd you kind of do your research back in that day? I mean, this day and age, we have internet. For things even like this, typically there's a website. How do you find out about the Continental Football League back in 1969?
Matt, I knew nothing about the Continental Football League except that piece of paper that they handed to me, and I had to hunt down the PR guy. Jersey was there with nobody except team, so we had nothing from them.
Oh, wow.
And we just had a Indianapolis roster sheet with both teams on it, and we had no chance to really research the two ball clubs. Just went out, did the game, and then forgot about it, and so did the rest of the country.
Well, it's fascinating. As you point out, there's not a whole lot of people at this game aside from the Indianapolis Capitals cheerleaders, but Indianapolis was all over the Jersey Jays in this game. But you make it sound exciting. Obviously, there's not much crowd background in this one. I'm not sure the officials were really even paying much attention because throughout the whole thing, I don't think I ever hear you call a penalty, which is sort of fascinating as well. But that's interesting back then that you were kind of just playing this on the fly here as the game kind of went along.
Well, I was getting paid by the Caps, so obviously wanted to do as good a job as I could under somewhat stressful circumstances.
Well, sir, I would say that you completely succeeded in that one. Again, this is a new edition of Over the Timeline with Joe Tate here on WEOL, stream number 2, and WEOL.com, brought to you by Life Care Center of Elyria, Medina, and Westlake. Taking a look back at 1969 when Joe Tate called an Indianapolis Capitals Jersey Jays game in a fascinating league, the Continental Football League. And I mentioned pretty much used as a minor league for the NFL, and that's what you bring up here in this next soundbite as well.
As Nate noted, most of these players on these two ball clubs do not lack the talent to make it to the big time. It's either just a half step here or a couple of pounds there or an inch or two there. And many of them have been sent here specifically by the big time clubs to play regularly in hopes that they will mature into the style of ball player to play in the big time.
Now, from where your one game you called, did any of these guys end up making it into the big time doing big things?
I don't believe so. I think they had their moment of glory in the Continental League and then went on to whatever they did for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, I don't recall hearing any bad hands wins touchdowns in any Super Bowls somewhere along the way. We'll take a quick break. We'll hear from our sponsor here, Life Care Center of Elyria, Medina, and Westlake, and back with more in just a minute on Over the Timeline with Joe Tate.
He was a voice heard by Cleveland Cavalier and Cleveland Indians fans for decades.
There's a long drive to left field!
Until illness struck.
I've been at Life Care twice. Both times, they helped me fight my way back home. It wasn't easy, but I came back.
Meet Joe Tate.
Life Care helped get me back on my feet.
Real people, real heroes. Life Care Centers of America.
With locations in Elyria, Westlake, and Medina.
Welcome back to Over the Timeline with Joe Tate, presented by Life Care Center of Elyria, Medina, and Westlake. Matt Douglas with you today, and we've been talking with Joe throughout this podcast about his time calling games in the Continental League, which was, one, game. The Indianapolis Capitals taking on the Jersey Jays, and this game had a little bit of an Ohio connection. At the end of the third quarter, the Jersey Jays fumbled the ball, giving the ball right back to the Indianapolis Capitals, and Miami University halfback Al Moore steps into the game, takes to the house for the Indianapolis Capitals.
Jim Walker comes out wide to the right. Charlie Lawrence wide to the left. Stavrov quarterbacking for the Caps. Turns, pitches out wide to the right to Moore. He's at the 35. He's at the 30, 25, 20, 50, 10, 5, touchdown. Al Moore took the ball, ran around the right end of the line, and nobody got even close to him. 34-3, and Mr. Moore from Miami had the old Redskin war paint on that time. That's the way he used to run down to the Mid-Am Conference, and he really got up ahead of steam coming around the right end of the line, and that's six more for the Caps.
That was a 36-yard run around the right end, and I don't think anyone laid a hand on him at all, Joe.
Once he got going, he got a couple of good blocks along the right end of the line, and it was Katie Barr the door for a quick six, and now it's 34-3 with 14:52 to go in the ball game.
I don't mean to be a spoiler alert here for anybody, but if you haven't looked it up already, the Indianapolis Capitals cruise to victory in this game and pull off the win. And we heard a little bit there from your color commentator as well, Nate Hirsch, who was involved in this game. And this was a gentleman from Indiana State, you said, who was interested in it. And you said, hey, come along. Let's call this great Indianapolis Capitals Jersey Jays game, huh?
Yeah, Nate Hirsch, I am proud to say I gave him his start in broadcasting at WBOW. And he went on to much bigger and better things. He was the voice of the Georgia Southern Eagles for 31 years and was also one of my closest personal friends, a man that we really had a very close personal bond. And I went down several times to visit him, and he came up to places like whenever the Cavaliers would show up in a city at least reasonably cool. close to Statesboro, he'd come up and visit. So we maintained our friendship long after Moore quit running touchdowns for the Caps.
Well, that's fantastic, yeah. That's really cool to hear as well. And I'm sure you've got many people in touch from your radio days. And it's really neat to have a gentleman like that who you give your first job and, as you mentioned, goes down south and creates some more opportunities for folks with new stations and gets that opportunity to play-by-play on that level, too. Georgia Southern Eagles, no joke, I think we're an FCS school, have now since gone into the FBS realm as well.
And one more, Don Fisher, who started because my mother knew his mother. He came to WBOW and got him rolling into play-by-play. He has been the voice of the Indiana Hoosiers in football and basketball for probably 30 years. And every time I hear him on a radio station out of Indiana, I think, boy, he has really come a long way because he's an excellent play-by-play guy.
Yeah. I always like talking to you about Indiana. For those who don't know, I myself, Matt Douglas, grew up most of my life in northern Indiana, but trust me, there's a little separation. IU covers that entire state. It's very much like an Ohio State aspect here. And
yep.
Come basketball season in particular. Now, the football team's been doing a lot better lately, but people love the basketball over in Indiana.
Yeah.
When I was there, Bobby Knight had been the coach, and there's a lot of loyalty there. When he was fired and goes to Texas Tech, I never seen this anywhere else. There were a lot of IU/Texas Tech flags. That's what I remember most about that experience. And people kept their loyalty to Bobby Knight. They weren't going to turn their back on IU either. It was one of those situations.
Gee, we ought to dig off from the files the night that Ohio U, when I was broadcasting for them, went over to Indiana and beat the Hoosiers in overtime 92-90.
Well, that's probably going to be our next podcast now that you bring that up. I'll have to see if I can't find that. There have been some great games played down there in Bloomington, Indiana. And as I mentioned, a number of friends who ended up going to IU, and they say that experience inside the field house is second to none. And you had the opportunity to head in there, huh?
Yes.
What'd you think of it?
Oh, Indiana. See, I worked at Frankfort and I worked at Terre Haute, so I knew what Indiana was all about. And also the fact that come high school tournament basketball time, every radio station in the state of Indiana, if you remember in Hoosiers, they had all those radio stations lined up. That's the way it was at Butler. every radio station in Indiana came and broadcast the championship games, whether their team was involved in it or not. It was the whole state stopped at back in the days when they just had the one group of teams, big and small.
Well, and I was you've never seen a bigger controversy than when they decided to go and change that to, okay, we're going to do this now by the sections or divisions or whatever you want to call it.
Yep.
I was there, it was in the 90s. I mean, they were late to do it because they wanted that Hoosiers feel. They
That's
wanted
right.
the little guy versus the big guy.
Yep.
Now, you mentioned Frankfort, which has my ultimate favorite team nickname, the Hot Dogs. That was one of my favorite things about seeing them pop up on schedules. I played high school football in Northern Indiana. We didn't see them too much. I think they were in our region, if I'm not incorrect, but you would see that Frankfort, and I always thought, it must be great. And their mascot, of course, was essentially a hot dog, right?
Yes, and they should have been called the Frankfort Doormats because they were in that conference with Lafayette, Newcastle, Muncie. I mean, big schools, and they just got their clocks cleaned on a regular basis.
Correct me if I'm wrong, that's not a real big school. I mean, the schools you mentioned are fairly large, particularly because there's big universities in those areas, too.
They have a field house at Frankfort that on a Friday night, if you filled it up, there wouldn't be anybody left in Frankfort.
I like that. Again, the hot dogs, the wiener dog was their mascot. That was one of my favorite things. We've been talking about Nate Hurst. Got a little off topic, but we can do that. It's a podcast, right?
That's true.
Talking about our time in Indiana, and it's always great to hear from someone else who's passed through the Hoosier State as well. We were talking about Nate Hurst, though, before we kind of got on that that run there about the Hoosier State, and you had talked about him, and he obviously was a big Braves fan. And how many games had you done with him at this time, do you know? Was this one of the earlier ones, or was
we'd worked together for a while. I'll tell you, we used to go over to Indianapolis, and they'd let us have a booth to practice doing baseball.
Yeah.
And the Indianapolis Indians played in the American Association in those days, and we'd just do the game on tape just for practice. But before the game, we'd both go down on the field and interview ball players who either had been in the bigs or were, you know, names that could register some interest in Terre Haute. And when Warren Spahn was with whatever, I don't even remember what team he was with, but he was the pitching coach. And when Nate Hurst saw him, he lit up like Christmas morning, and he took the tape, went over, and we had those old Norelco reel-to-reel tape recorders, and he started talking to Warren Spahn, who was just totally nice to him and just very, very cooperative, and they talked, and they talked, and they talked, and they talked, and the tape ran right off the reel, and he is still going, and I'm trying to point out to him, you know, hey, there's no tape. You know, you might as well stop because the tape is gone. And he went for 5 minutes after the tape had run out because Warren Spahn was his hero.
Well, that's pretty cool. That's neat to hear that as well. Cool for him to just kind of have that conversation, I suppose, there for that last 5 minutes.
Talked about that for years. Well, he really did.
That's one of my favorite parts. Obviously, Nate was a big baseball fan. He was a fan of the Braves, and that's what I liked about this. In this game, clearly the Capitals are blowing out the Jersey Jays. You guys find a way to keep it entertaining. Of the transition, too, you went straight into the baseball scores, and you let Nate have it, for lack of a better word, because he was a Braves fan. So let's hear that soundbite from the Capitals game. As the Capitals clearly have this one en route to a victory. You start talking a little baseball here with Nate.
Certainly very happy. I'm sure most of the people that came over here, of course, Capital fans. And I know that some busloads came over from Indianapolis. Some people came over to see the Capitals play. They'll be opening their home season next week at Seattle. They'll be home, I believe, September the 6th is their first home opener.
The Chicago Cubs just scored 4 runs to beat the Astros 10-9. How about that, Nate? And the Cardinals give it to the Braves right in the ear. Don't jump, Nate. It's a long season.
I didn't get the score on that one.
I didn't get the score either. All I heard was that the Braves were on the short end of whatever the score was. Maybe Steve Smith will give it to us at the end of the game.
Being a Cubs fan, you should be rooting for the Braves today, though.
As long as we win, who cares?
There you go. I love that. Barb walked in as I was listening to that. I had a smile on my face. She said, what are you doing? Barb McCann, one of our sales reps here at WEOL. And I was just chuckling at the way you gave it to Nate there. You didn't know the score of the game, but that didn't matter, darn it. You were going to rub his face in the fact the Cubs won and the Braves ended up going down big to the St. Louis Cardinals.
We had some great moments together. We had a night where Dave Nicholson, who later played for the White Sox, hit a home run out of Busch Stadium across the street and through the uprights of the Catholic High School football field. And it was such a tremendous clout that Nate and I started laughing, and we couldn't stop laughing because the ball just kept rolling and rolling and rolling down the football field. And it was, you know, we were on tape. It didn't mean we were on the air.
Sure.
So we just both just sat there and giggled because that ball just kept on rolling.
Well, it makes for exciting radio. For the people who are listening, I mean, that's one of my favorite aspects of listening to play-by-play when you have two guys who have that type of chemistry, can bring humor into a broadcast, especially in a game like this one where I can't remember the final score ends up being the Capitals blow the Jersey Jays away. And then you get that humor in there as well. And anytime you can poke fun of a Braves fan, always a good thing as well, for sure. I did, in doing my research, it was a fascinating season for the Indianapolis Capitals. For those who are intrigued in what exactly happened, you had mentioned Frank Stavrov, who was the quarterback for the Capitals, was an IU guy, Big Ten quarterback, had broken records and passing at Indiana University. Apparently got hurt in the middle of the season, and in comes Johnny Walton from the what can only be described as football power, Elizabeth City State Teachers College in Elizabeth City, North Carolina. And he had been a guy who had the Rams. The L.A. Rams apparently had some interest in him, and he comes in, finishes out the season. They go on to win the Continental Football Championship, and there you go, Indianapolis. I mean, who even cares about that one? They won with Peyton Manning. They won the Continental Football Championship back in 1969.
Right.
So some other interesting things I did find. While the Capitals were doing this, apparently in their semifinal matchup with San Antonio, the reservation at the hotel fell through. They had to sleep on the mezzanine on cots because they didn't have enough rooms for these guys. So I'm imagining it was a little bit like that for the league. And I suppose if you're playing at Terre Haute, your first game there of the season, then it probably wasn't going to get much better than that, huh?
You'll notice on the cut you played, I said there were several busloads of fans.
Yes.
That came up. No, I said that, but they were busloads of the ball players who came over from Indianapolis, played. They climbed right back on the buses and went right back to Indianapolis.
That's funny. So obviously those were the fans that showed up and attended. If you weren't playing the game, you were cheering for the teams. Other than that, a few cheerleaders, yourself and Nate Hirsch calling the game in attendance. Joe, as always, a pleasure talking to you about some of these things. Like I said, man, it is fascinating. Once I open those sound bites and start looking, the things I find and the things you've had the ability to call, you ever look back on it? I mean, obviously, you've got a great memory of this stuff. Are there ever any things that kind of stick out in your mind as, look, people may not remember much about that, but that was certainly a fun event to call like this one here.
Well, I'll tell you this. Until you brought it up, I had totally forgotten about that August football game in August of 69. But it was great to hear it again. I enjoyed it more, and I'm sure anybody who listened to it did.
Well, good. Hopefully I can find some more stuff in the very near future. You've been listening to Over the Timeline, our WEOL podcast with Joe Tate, presented by Life Care Center of Elyria, Medina, and Westlake. More episodes to come, WEOL.com, stream number 2, and of course online at WEOL.com.